You're listening to the Katakalam Project on Katakalam Media. This is Che Ting Ye. On the Katakalam Project, we have long been interested in the idea of crossing cultures and overlapping identities, as expressed through art and civic action. Today we continue down that path, and we look at an American novel that has recently come out called The Third Son, that tells the story of a boy who grew up in between the Japanese colonial period and the early years of Chinese nationalist rule in Taiwan. Jonathan Lee and I caught up with the book's author, Julie Wu, as she tours around the US talking to audiences about her book. Julie is Taiwanese-American herself, and has gone through being a literature major, an opera singer, and yes, becoming a doctor. Throughout all this, she managed to write a novel that not only introduces American readers to Taiwan's history, but also is just a great story. Here is our conversation with Julie. Julie, thanks for being on the show with us.
My pleasure.
So here we're just going to sort of do a little more of a conversation style. We know you've been going around different places in the country to talk about your novel, The Third Son.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us a little bit about what the book is about? So we could have a little bit of background as to, you know, where we start talking.
So The Third Son is a novel which is set in Taiwan from the period about 1943 and then progresses to the United States in the 60s. And it's about a boy who grows up unloved and in a very oppressive environment, but who is inspired by the woman that he loves to overcome his circumstances and become happy against all odds.
So, you know, we've heard you talk about the book from the other events and speeches and so forth. I'm just a little curious, when you introduce the book, do you make a decision as to, should I mention the part that it's set in Taiwan and there's a historical factor, you know, the historical side to it? Do you talk about that first? Or do you talk about, well, it's a story about a boy and his love and his personal struggles. It just happens to be set in this place at this time.
Well, that's interesting. I think sometimes I go back and forth and say, mm-hmm. you know, it's a love story. It's a, you know, immigration story. And it's also set in Taiwan. But I think that, you know, if I say first that it's in Taiwan, it kind of sets the historical concept context a little bit, and then I can talk about the story in that context. So yeah, I mean, I think primarily I like to think of it as the personal story, but set in the context of history.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get the idea of writing this story that's set in this historical period that, you know, of course, a lot of your readers might not be familiar with, or a lot of people who grew up in Taiwan might not even be familiar with?
Yeah, well, I definitely wanted to tell both stories, both the personal story of this boy overcoming a personal struggle and also this story of Taiwan post-war, which is really unknown in outside of Taiwan, as you said, and in some cases in Taiwan. Because it's a very interesting part of history that was censored for a long period of time, and I feel like it needs a little bit more attention. So it starts during the Japanese occupation of Taiwan, or the colonization of Taiwan, which occurred for 50 years from 1895 to 1945. So it starts in 1943 at the end of the Japanese colonial period, and then it continues through the coming of the nationalist Chinese from China, and the events that occurred after that, including the February 28th massacres and the White Terror after that, which is a period of martial law that lasted mm-hmm. for about 40 years in Taiwan, which most people in the United States don't know anything about.
Right, because I remember earlier this afternoon you mentioned you were talking to book clubs, right?
Right.
That are, you know, people that are not from Taiwan, or maybe have never heard of Taiwan, or, you know, they read about it in high school history or something. And I know you mentioned, you know, like Chiang Kai-shek was the good guy.
I thought,
you know, that was the story. And, you know, I remember talking to people, you know, and I remember reading the history books in high school, and it was like, Oh, yeah. So there was a civil war in China, and then the nationalists fled to Taiwan and established, you know, the government there. And all it all sounds like Taiwan was an uninhabited island.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. No one lived in Taiwan before the nationalists got there.
Yeah. And actually, yeah, that's been interesting because when I was talking to, a mom, another mom in my town who is Chinese American. Mm-hmm. And I was telling her a little bit about my book, and she said, "You mean there were people on Taiwan before Chiang Kai-shek got there?" And I said, "Yes, actually, there were people there." But I think that most people do have that impression because that's sort of standard in the media. That's their standard phrase for whenever they have an article about Taiwan is to say, you know, that the conflict between Taiwan and China arose in 1949 or whatever when...
Oh, yeah. Separated by a civil war.
Yeah.
China considers Taiwan
a renegade province. Yeah,
self-governing.
That's the standard line. It's sort of implied in that line that there was nobody on Taiwan and that nobody... Yeah, that the only people who are there are the people who... were associated with the government.
So all our ancestors were kind of hanging out.
Yeah, right.
Uncivilized.
Yeah, or even I even read a history book where they were, you know, describing the nationalists' arrival to Taiwan, where they said, well, most of Taiwan was a bunch of fishermen and rural people, and that it really was not true.
I mean, like, that kind of reminds me, you have this sort of, in Taiwan, you have the surge of, you know, movies primarily, right, about this part of history that's before 1949 in Taiwan. So you have
Kano,
which just came out.
Sidik Bale.
Right. Obviously, Jonathan watches a lot more movies than I do. But anyway, it's about, and I remember watching the extended trailer for Kano, right? And then there's this scene, well, because my family is from Jiayi, and so I know those places, and there's a scene where, you know, they've just finished building the dam, like the reservoir.
So like the grand opening.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's this scene that's like, wow, there's this a feat of engineering back in like the 30s and 20s. And no, I guess the question is, how do you see your work, your novels, you know, whether it's The Third Son or subsequent projects that you're working on, teach or show people about Taiwan's history, especially to people outside of Taiwan, to Americans or otherwise?
Well, I feel like there's been such a lopsided portrayal of what's gone on in Taiwan. I'm just trying to present at least, you know, one alternative viewpoint. So I know I can't say that the viewpoint that's in The Third Son speaks for everybody, because it certainly, you know, I mean, I do include information about the Aborigines and other minorities, but it is predominantly the viewpoint of the Han,
right,
Taiwanese who came over to Taiwan in like the 17th centuries, the 17th, 18th centuries. So, but I just feel like it's an underrepresented viewpoint, and it is one of the majority viewpoints there. And it's been buried, and I feel like, you know, I'm just trying to shed a little bit of light on there and balance things out a little bit.
So how was, I guess, the reaction when you were doing the research? Because I know personally, for a lot of folks, sometimes even my parents, this part of history is something that people kind of want to even forget. They don't want to deal with it, even though they know it's very traumatic for them, and maybe the story should be told. A lot of folks at times have been just said, let's just forget about it. That's history, that's the past. Like, let's not dwell on it.
Well, you know, I know that there are people who think that way, and so for that reason, they haven't really talked about it much to their kids. But I'm finding that a lot of people are really happy that I've put into words and in a book something that parallels their own experiences, that echoes what they have felt and what they've experienced, and they also feel that it's important for their children to know what they went through, so they understand a little bit more about why, you know, maybe why they behave the way that they do, or why, you know, maybe why things are the way that they are, and why there's this conflict in Taiwan about, you know, sort of identity, about the sunflower movement, all this kind of stuff, to give them a little bit of background. Mm-hmm. So I think if you don't know the history, then you're not going to understand what's going on there now.
Yeah, so another question I had when you were talking about sort of the underrepresented viewpoint of, have you ever thought about writing a story about a character that was a mainlander, or sort of that side of that story, or, you know, the mainlander characters that pop out in your novels, that, you know, how do you approach them, right? So, you know, obviously, you know, do you try to make sure there's a sympathetic side to them, or...
Yeah, I tried to be fair in my novel. I mean, obviously, there are not very many mainlanders in there, and the people who are in there are really very biased against mainlanders. But I tried to be a little bit balanced, and you know, have some good guys in there from the mainland, because there were good people on both sides, and there were bad people on both. There were also Taiwanese who worked for the nationalists and betrayed Taiwanese people. So there were people on both sides, and I do feel, you know, I'm trying to explore that a little bit more deeply in my next book, which is going to deal more with the period after the one that I talk about in here, and like in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And I think in that period there was even more of a kind of mix. And there are people like Nylon Tsung.
Oh yeah, yeah. So,
yeah, like the mainland. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The who you know, he was a mainlander, but
right,
he was
right.
You know, obviously very committed to.
So yeah, for people who don't know, who haven't heard of Zheng Nanzhong, so shame on you. I'm just kidding. So Zheng Nanzhong was he's a figure in Taiwan's recent history. Was a magazine editor for basically published a lot of these underground band magazines. He said he would register 30, 40 different titles.
Yeah.
Just so that, you know, once one got shut down, he would take another title and publish under that title.
Smart.
Right away.
Yeah. I think that was a common practice. They had to do that, yeah.
He was one of these very controversial, very outspoken guys who, and there's a very famous YouTube clip, actually you can watch this on YouTube, where he got on stage in, I think it was 1988 or 1989, and he said, you know, my name is Zheng Nanzhong and I support Taiwan independence. And this actually was used a lot in the Sunflower Movement.
Mm.
You know, a lot of students got up and said, you know, my name is so-and-so and I support Taiwan independence.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was subpoenaed, they wanted to arrest him, and then he basically locked himself up in his office and then blew himself up along with the office.
Right. He set himself on fire because he said that he, you know, rather than, because they were coming for him and he was waiting for that moment when they came for him, and then he set himself on fire because he said he wasn't going to submit.
The interesting thing with this is because I was living in Taiwan at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was, you know, I was in elementary school, and I don't remember this at all. Like, I do not remember seeing this on the news, not that I watched the news, but but, you know, it was like, I thought, you know, I should have some recollection. Oh, yeah, I remember, like, it was a big deal, like, the grown-ups are talking about it. Like, no, I don't remember this at all.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I didn't find out about this until very recently when I, you know, did some research on my own, but, yeah.
There's a museum about him.
In the office,
in Taipei.
Right?
At the
site where he blew himself, where he set himself on fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But kind of coming back to that, so talk a little bit more about this next book that you're planning to do.
Yeah. Well, I did want to focus more on the people who were more politically involved, because the Third Son, you know, is about sort of the regular people with the backdrop of the history, and I was very interested in finding out more about the people, like the people who were incarcerated on Green Island, on, you know, Hui Shoto, and so actually, I went to Taiwan in 2012 and interviewed a bunch of former inmates, former political prisoners from the time period. They were all people who were on Hui Shoto you know, for varying periods of time, for really random reasons. I think only one of them was actually politically active. The other people were just basically in the wrong place at the wrong time. I think one of them was arrested because he was arrested when he was 19, because when he was 16, he was in a study group with some other people who were later thought to be socialists. So he was just thrown in prison. He, you know, basically was some studious guy who didn't know anything about politics. And then I talked to another guy who was a post office worker, mm-hmm. and he was made to take Mandarin lessons because he didn't know Mandarin. So along with his coworkers, he took Mandarin lessons with a Chinese teacher, and later that Chinese teacher was found to have ties to socialists in China, so their whole class was arrested and sent to prison. And so he actually got 15 years in prison just for taking this class that he was made to take. So there are all these, you know, tragic stories, but also amazing stories, because it turns out that so that post office worker, he went to prison, went to Green Island, and while he was there, he made a violin out of scrap wood that he found on the beach, and this other man, the man who was 19 and got arrested because of the study group, he was a real intellectual. He was very skilled at translating. When he was in prison, he taught Chinese to the guy next to him who was illiterate. And then when he got out of prison, he became a translator. And actually, as you know, many of the prisoners were harassed after they were released, so that they had difficulty holding employment or even keeping their domiciles, because the landlords would be harassed and everything. But because he was such a good translator, his employers were willing to deal with all the harassment. So he ended up co-founding a publishing company and employing a lot of his former they call each other classmates from Green yeah. Island. They call it Green Island University. Yeah, so they call each other classmates. So he actually was the lifeline for a lot of these people who couldn't find employment elsewhere, which is really kind of ironic, because he really viewed himself as this really meek, you know, studious kid who really didn't know anything about the world.
Wow.
So yeah, so a lot of really amazing stories.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit before about taking some of these historical facts or things, you know, sort of a factual real life accounts, and then turning them into something more either artistic or something that's more readable or enjoyable as a sort of commercial story. So do you have any ideas how to take these the stories that you just described, or these political prisoners, and weave them into something that's sort of more of a page, I don't want to say page turner, but something that's more enjoyable as a story?
Yeah. Well, in this case, I mean, I think with the Third Son, it was more a challenge of taking the story of an ordinary person and making it more dramatic. Mm-hmm. I talked before, about how my father told this great story about how he was almost bitten by a snake, and I had that in my book, and then I realized that was really boring, so then I had him actually get bitten by the snake, and then that made it a much more, that caused a lot of consequences, that made it a much more interesting story.
This is the Julie Wu corollary to the Chekhov rule.
yeah, exactly.
Right, if there's a snail, he must bite.
Yeah, if there's a snake, he's got to bite you. And if he's going to bite you, he'd better be poisonous. I think with the political prisoners, it's a different kind of challenge, because the stories themselves are heroic already. And I think for me, the challenge is to make it kind of come to life in a day-to-day sort of, mm-hmm. Closer level, instead of, just having it be some mythic
Right,
story.
Right. So it's almost the opposite problem.
Yeah, almost.
So it's more relatable.
Yeah, or sort of fleshing it out so it's more human.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas beyond, I mean, this project? Maybe, I don't know, doing something that's in the 2000s, the 90s, 2000s, make a trilogy. I mean, that's the way, right? Like, things are sold these
days. Yeah, trilogy. Right? Oh, so, I'll have to do that.
Right? So, like, 1940 to 1960, right? 1960 to 1990, 1990 to 2015, 2016.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see what happens in the politics. You know, well, I mean, no, it's true that there's because I am kind of viewing this, my second book, as sort of the journey from martial law to democracy, or to free, you know, to free this free speech era. So, and then I guess after that, there's that progression until the DPP comes into power. But then, you know, we don't know what happens after that. So,
well, I think the story that Ting might even allude to is that there's not a lot of reporting on what does the average person in Taiwan think today, right? There's this just assumption that, you know, you grow up in this free society, everything's fine, copacetic, they don't care about anything for the younger generation. But then the Sunflower Movement kind of proved that wrong. That proved that the people do, like, the average youth does care. So it'd be interesting that all of a sudden it's like, you know, maybe for the third book, not hinting, but it talks about this is what they're thinking right now. And then like 30, 40 years later, just be amazing. Just be like, whoa, like, you know, this was something like live history that occurred.
You know, and I think that if it hasn't happened by then, I think the third book will be, you know, will be this like utopian vision of Taiwan, like how it evolves into this. Yeah.
But then that wouldn't be interesting as a novel.
Yeah, I don't think, right?
You need conflict. You know,
it's almost going to be like, you know, like John wakes up, everything is fine.
It's like the Lego movie, everything's awesome.
Yeah.
But then underneath the surface.
That's right. But yeah, well, yeah, exactly. So then under the surface, he has to, you know, figure out that,
like,
there's...
Why is, you know...
He has to become the hero and then save everything.
Right, because there's got to be a problem for the hero to solve, right? Interesting.
So I'm sure you've been asked this a lot, but what has been the mainstream American response to the book?
The mainstream American response, I think, is, you know, it's like, oh, what a great story, and wow, I didn't know anything about Taiwan before, and it was really interesting. I think that's the... You know, so now I know a little bit about Taiwan. It's, you know, I think the most that I can hope for.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, I think as we were sort of talking about before, I think that, you know, sort of the older generation, especially that grew up during the Cold War, they're really shocked because, you know, they say, I thought Chiang Kai-shek was the good guy. And like here, you know, I had no idea that he did anything bad to his own people. And, you know, because they were all sold on the whole, you know, free China story of Taiwan.
And is the book going to get published in Taiwan? Is it banned? Is it?
No, it's the rights have been sold to a Taiwanese publisher for it to be translated into Mandarin.
Now, so we'll need to see how well it is in the China market, right?
If it gets to the China market.
I am doubting that it will be sold to a Chinese publisher, but, you know, in China. But I'm betting that once it comes out in Taiwan, there'll be a lot of piracy. I would imagine that to be
right,
so.
Right, but you don't, I mean, you'll sort of close, you know, turn a blind eye if... Yeah. People pirate your books, or, you know, and
I mean, I don't
smuggle
like
them into
China. Yeah, I mean,
please go out and buy a copy.
Well, please buy them legally. But I think if it's really successful in Taiwan, I don't know whether then the Chinese publishers would then. But I don't know. But I mean, if they're just upset because Angelina Jolie says, you know, that Ang Lee is Taiwanese, then I can't imagine that they would buy this book in which, you know, it's all about Taiwan being its own entity.
Yeah, so. Well, actually, I think it would be interesting to see if people in Hong Kong reads it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because there's definitely a little bit more of an interest in Hong Kong about the history of Taiwan and the political transitions and going on in Taiwan. So,
yeah.
So I guess that's kind of interesting. We'll
have to see what happens. Yeah, I'm very curious. I hope it comes out soon. People keep on asking me when, but I think by contract it's supposed to come out within 18 months of the contract.
The, right.
Signed, so we'll see what happens.
Okay, so it'll definitely be out in the next 5 years or so, given how efficient the publishing industry is.
Yeah, I don't know if they're any faster in Taiwan than here, but yeah, it's supposed to be out within 18 months according by contract. Otherwise, the rights revert back, so we'll see.
So I think that's all the time that we have for today. But if you're in Taiwan and you're waiting to read the Chinese version, definitely start looking for it in about a year and a half.
Hope so.
And but if you do read English, it is out now, so definitely go on Amazon or Barnes & Noble's or whichever independent bookstore you happen to support in your town. If they don't have it, ask for it, The Third Son by Julie Wu.
And it's also available in audiobook if you can't read English that well, but you can understand it.
Right. Great. So thank you so much for joining us today. It was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, thanks.
This is Che Ting Ye, and you have been listening to the Katagalan Project on Katagalan Media. Find us on our website at katagalanmedia.com. That's KETAGALANmedia.com. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time.